Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you will find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed here are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program and what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Lori C., a compulsive overeater from Winnipeg, Manitoba. Welcome, Lori. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. So 6:23 my time, so that's fine. I 6:53. I'm privileged to speak here, and it's wonderful to have a meeting that is devoted to newcomers and people who are returning, because there's a lot of important information that I hope I'll be able to provide to you. I've been abstinent for about 28 and a half years now. I count my abstinence date as around May the 1st. But I was a member of OA for almost, it'll be 36 years in February of 2022. And in the first 6 or 7 years of my following the program, I went in and out of relapse, until I finally figured out what was wrong and what was going on. And the Big Book plays an incredibly important role in that. When I first joined, I joined because a member of AA who had been a gutter drunk for many, many years, and who had introduced me to all the other ex-gutter drunk people, the guys who were literally in the gutter and were picked up by the AA people, and they were serene and wonderful people with wisdom beyond compare. When he told me that I had the right to take my food addiction as seriously as he took his alcohol addiction. And I'll never forget that moment, because I've never in the worst of my addiction, I was never going to eat a donut and suddenly rush into traffic, sort of not knowing where I was, or gamble away my house or something like that. My addiction is a slow and deadly one, but it's absolutely not dramatic unless I'm so underweight or so overweight that one false move could make a difference in my health. But I suffer, my family suffers from diabetes and high blood pressure and heart conditions. And I have seen the effect of compulsive eating, overeating in my family's case, on their health and on their well-being. I've had two very, very close family members suffer strokes and last another 4 years in tremendous bitterness because they were unable to read in one case or unable to speak in another. And had no mobility and were just gradually deteriorating. People who undereat, people who overeat, have basically a death by a thousand cuts. The fact is that if they are compulsive eaters, whether they undereat or overeat, and they don't deal with their addiction, they are going to die a death by a thousand cuts. They will become more and more dependent upon other people, less and less able to participate in life, less and less, more and more vulnerable to illnesses that could debilitate them in terrible ways. Not dramatic. And sometimes we forget that. We also forget that what I was looking for, because I had tried all kinds of diets in my life, what I was looking for was the same ability that my friend had when he joined AA after a horrible series of drunks and created a school of bartending and wasn't attracted to the alcohol that he was serving and that he was teaching his bartending students how to mix. Because the key to what he had was that he didn't want what he knew he couldn't indulge in. And we don't hear that often in OA, that the difference between the 12 steps and the 12-step fellowship dealing with addiction and all kinds of other support groups like TOPS or the Way and Pay plans that provide some form of support, and us, is that what we offer to an addict is the freedom from being tempted to return to that which we abstain from. And we don't recognize that, and we don't talk about that. We talk about, oh, the spiritual values, and we found a higher power, and you know, we're guided by some God, but we don't talk about the real reason I came to OA. I didn't come to OA to find God. I came to OA because I couldn't stop eating, and I didn't know why I couldn't stop eating. So I joined the fellowship. I got a sponsor. When I joined, basically our literature was the AA Big Book, the AA 12 and 12, and a series of stories found in two books of OA literature and some pamphlets. And I devoured them, literally, not literally, but I read them all. I got a sponsor. I lost a lot of weight and I relapsed. And then I regained, I went back, I worked the steps, felt great and relapsed. And this went on for about 7 years. And I was always coming to meeting. And even though I don't know how much I weighed when I first joined OA, somehow I had this notion that I was still at least 5 pounds less than I was when I joined, even though I'd lost tons of weight at various points in this, you know, in my membership. One day, the shyest woman in the room came up to me and asked me a question that everyone at the meeting I attended used to ask me, "How are you, Lori?" And I said, "Fine." And everyone else used to say, "Oh, glad to hear that, Lori. Good to hear you. Good, keep coming back. You know, nice to hear you talk." But this woman didn't do that. And she told me she had prayed for 2 weeks before she did what she did. After I said, "Fine," she came right up to me, and I'll come up close to the camera because this is about as close as she came. "I mean, really," she said. And whoa, I sure wasn't expecting that. But I can't tell you how much love there was in the passion with which she spoke. You know, I have a friend in OA, a mentor who's passed on now, but he used to say, honesty without compassion can be cruel, but compassion without honesty can kill. And I was being treated with compassion, but not much honesty. The honesty that my friend gave me was, "You're in terrible shape. What the hell are you doing about it?" And I went through a period of with working with her for 2 or 3 months until I was asked to sponsor a man and met with him who had just joined OA and found out that he had been sober in AA for 15 years and I had been abstinent in OA for maybe a total on and off of maybe 2 years, you know, on and off and on and off, a week here, a month there, and all that. And he told me that he had achieved it by studying the Big Book as a set of directions for working the steps, not as an inspirational guide, which I was using it for, not as an eloquent, at times annoying book, not as a book that occasionally had directions that I didn't have to follow because there are other directions that people follow, but as literally a set of directions for working the steps to be used as it was intended to be used. It was printed as a manual for working the steps for people who did not have a sponsor available to them. And it because at the time it was published and printed, when it was published, there were only 3 groups in the whole of the world, one in New York, one in Akron, Ohio, and one in Cleveland, Ohio. And they wanted to have this book tell people how to recover if they lived anywhere else in the world. And once I began to accept that, I then also began to study the book as a set of directions with my friend guiding me. He was very much influenced by people, some of you may have heard of Joe and Charlie, who were AA speakers, passed on now, but who did the first major re-examination of the Big Book in AA to look at it as a set of directions. and also by a person in Winnipeg who had a huge influence on him, who was an AA guy who had counted Charlie from Joe and Charlie as his sponsor, who, in my opinion and in his opinion, sort of stood on the giant shoulders of Joe and Charlie and did more work that was very valuable. We began to study the Big Book as a set of directions, and both of us recovered. And when I say recovered, I mean I had what the Big Book calls a personality change sufficient to overcome my addiction. I don't mean that I found a God and fell to my knees and prayed to a God. I have no God in any traditional sense of the word. I don't have a sense of creative intelligence or energy of the spirit of the universe. I grew up I'm a third generation agnostic. My grandparents rejected the Orthodox Judaism of their parents. And they practice an agnosticism, if not a slightly belligerent, but completely skeptical view of organized religion of any kind. And I've maintained that over the years. But the Big Book makes room for me, not always in the words it used, but in the actual directions it does. And this is what I learned, and this is what the Big Book, I think, has to teach us in OA. Because we often miss it. First of all, the biggest lesson I learned, and one of the main reasons for my relapses, was that I wanted to believe and did believe what all the diets I'd been on told me, and what my sponsor, God bless him, who helped me in so many ways, but what my sponsor told me was true, that my addiction was to compulsive eating, and that once I worked the steps, I would no longer eat compulsively. I could eat anything I wanted, and I would only want to eat it in moderation. And that may be true for some people, but it wasn't true for me. What happened to me was the same as what happened to me every time I went on a diet using a weigh and pay plan, which was I would go on a stringent diet, I would lose my weight, and then they would say, well, now you can have a little bit of ice cream a week, or a little bit of donuts, or a little bit of cookie. And what happened to me when I did that in OA is the same as what happened to me when I did that in the Weigh and Pay plan, which was that the little bit of ice cream once a week became a little bit of ice cream and a donut and a cookie instead of one or the other. And then that became a bunch of ice cream, not carefully measured. And then it became the tub of ice cream and a whole bunch of cookies and a whole bunch of donuts. And what I finally accepted was the reality of my own situation, which was that I had a reaction to certain kinds of foods, and it turns out also to certain kinds of eating behaviors, that caused me cravings that my body, that my mind could not overcome. That as much as I wanted to, I ended up at times hunched over something, and it could be a tub of ice cream, taking the food in my mouth with my mind saying, you have to stop. This is bad. This is bad for you. You've got to lose weight. You've got to stop. And my mind would say, well, this is the last one. This is the last one. No, this will be the last one. This will be the last one. And it kept on happening. What I had to understand was that that's not my real problem. I had to accept the reality, which was that in some way, shape, or form, I don't think it's necessarily chemical or biological, but there's some deep ingrained reaction that is so similar to the reaction that my body has when I hold my breath or try to keep my eyes open, that at a certain point, if I indulge in this in eating this stuff that does this problem for me, somehow my mind has no control. And it's like my body is saying, you're going to breathe, you're going to blink your eyes, and also you're going to eat that donut. I want more of that. Now, I'm not saying that it's necessarily genetic, cultural, whatever it is, it's overpowering. That's all I know. And in the same way that the gambler, the compulsive gambler, is addicted to the eating behavior of gambling, the behavior of gambling in all of its many forms, I also found that I have some eating behaviors that I'm addicted to that cause me to overeat. There are volume issues. Just as for some people in OA, their eating behaviors may be restriction or purging or vomiting or something like that. It may not give them pleasure, but it's something they can't stop doing. And even though they know it's bad for them, even though they know it's killing them, or maybe it's body dysmorphia. Maybe it's this whole sense of what their body doesn't look like, but they think it looks like. Whatever it is, these are behaviors. And what I learned as I began to examine that with my friend who had joined OA with a single substance problem, which was alcohol, was that for OA, we're an umbrella and we span a spectrum of different kinds of things we can be addicted to. For me, it was specific kinds of foods and combinations of ingredients. For me, I found high fat content mixed with sugar and high fat content mixed with salt were major addictive foods. So that would include virtually all desserts, but it would also include the skin, battered, deep fried foods, skins of turkey, chicken wings and things like that that had a lot of skin and fat in them. It would include buttered popcorn, and potato chips and things of that sort. And I had some eating behaviors that I was addicted to. One of them was eating all the way up to the top of my neck. That was a volume issue. Even if I was eating stuff that didn't cause cravings in me, if I had the eating behavior of eating all the way up to the top of my neck, I speak figuratively here, that was an addiction. So I had to figure out ways of abstaining from these things. Unlike most other fellowships, in OA, the group conscience is clear and the experience is clear. I can eat things that you can't eat and you can eat things I can't eat. And we cannot impose on anyone else a plan of eating because it might not be right for them. Might be right for me, but not right for you. You might have a completely different series of ingredients and or specific foods that are your problem and eating behaviors that are your problem. I have nothing in common in the sense of the similar eating behaviors with an anorexic, but they have an eating behavior or maybe one or two or three or four eating behaviors that they have to abstain from. And maybe they have some foods they have to abstain from too, who knows? Same with the bulimic. I share with the bulimic compulsive overeating, but I don't share with them the eating behavior of purging or vomiting. So that's the first thing I learned from the big book, was I had to accept that in some way, shape or form, my body was sickened as well. Not that I had a specific kind of allergy. Who knows if I have an allergy in the normal sense, but it came out as an allergy in the sense that when I did something, I had a reaction to it most of the time. Once I accepted that, then my real problem became absolutely clear. And this was key. And the big book spends at least 2.5 chapters on this. The real problem of the addict is not that they have this physical problem with being addicted to some things. Listen, if you ate shrimp and you got an anaphylactic shock and would die, your mind would simply say, well, I won't eat shrimp. You know, why would I eat something that would kill me? The real problem I have, and if you had a leg amputated, or if like me, you wear hearing aids or you have to wear glasses, you don't have a mind that says, well, if you wear glasses for a while, then you don't have to wear them anymore because you've been good for 10 years. Or you do have a leg, even though you don't have a leg. Your mind wouldn't play that kind of tricks on you, those kind of tricks on you. The real problem, as the big book says, is that we have an overwhelming mind problem that persuades us at a certain point, gives us some kind of reason that says, okay, you can indulge. You can go back to that which you're abstaining from. And the reasons are often within OA. I mean, I've met so many people who have been traumatized as children in so many different ways. People who have been victims for much of their lives. And they often will say, well, I do this. I go back to the eating because of this trauma. And I'm sure that that is a very powerful reason. And I'm sure that at times the compulsive behavior or eating has given them some release from that trauma. But the reality is it doesn't matter in the mind what the reason is. The reason could be I have suffered horribly in my life. The reason could be I want to celebrate. And the reason could be I'm standing up so it doesn't count, or they're looking, or it's free, or I've been good for 20 minutes, or it's organic, so it's got to be good for me. It doesn't matter, because the real problem, as the Big Book points out, is not what our past is like. It's that our mind can't remember. I can't have this. It's bad for me. And once I understood that, that on the one hand, I couldn't stop once I started, that's the body kind of issue. And I also can't stop from starting, that's the mind issue. I'm in a vicious circle that is hopeless if I don't find a power outside of myself, because I have no power within myself to overcome this vicious circle. Once I accept that, then I accept that the 12 steps have given power to millions of people with dozens of addictions. And that gives me hope. Now, the other thing I discovered was that the Big Book has an image in mind that explains why the steps provide us with a power greater than ourselves. They say deep down within us is the fundamental idea of God. So what's God to me? I don't have anyone who looks over me as a puppet master, finds me parking spaces or anything of that sort. What I have are things I deeply believe in, things that are more important than me. After my death, they will still exist. And they're abstract values. To me, I use the words truth, love, justice, and beauty. Many people use many other ideas for that, but they're deep and I can't justify them. In the same way that someone who believes in a particular kind of God can't justify their belief, they just do believe. So the image of the Big Book is deep down within us is the fundamental idea of what we deeply believe in. It is obscured, blocked off by calamity, bad things that have happened, by pomp, a sense of self-importance, or by worship of other things like what other people think of me or money or prestige or something of that sort. But in some form or other, it was there. We have to search fearlessly, a searching and fearless moral inventory. And the idea here is that there is a blockage between what we deeply believe in our hearts and how we think and act in our heads. And the purpose of the steps is to get rid of the blockage. You know, I joke, it's the Drano or the Roto-Rooter of spirituality. And the whole point of the steps is that they get rid of that blockage. Those of you who are still, in part of your addiction, still addicted, will recognize the truth that that when you live according to your addiction, you're clearly not living according to what you deeply believe in. And that, you know, no matter how religious you are, the problem is not that there isn't a God. It is that you can't hear God. You're blocked off from 5 minutes, all right?
That's, yeah.
I think it's 8 minutes, but okay.
It can be 8 minutes.
I don't know. It was 23 after, so I sort of thought it'd be 53.2 and it's 46, 7 minutes.
Oh, anyway, no, you're right. Matter. You're right. It is 8 minutes. Sorry.
Okay, great. Sorry. I'm carefully monitoring this. This concept is what the steps 4 through 9 are. If you read the Big Book carefully, you will see that steps 4 through 9 are the inventory. It's not just step 4. The whole inventory that's carried is we face and are rid of the things which are blocking us. This is the words of the Big Book, blocking us from the sunlight of the spirit. So we have to face them. That's steps 4, 5, and 6. And then we get rid of them. That's 7, 8, 9. How do we get rid of them? We realize how we have harmed people and we make amends and in effect say, I no longer want to be the kind of person who harmed you And therefore, I want to change by making up for what I've done. Now, one of the really deep and complex issues relating to OA is that the big book was written by victimizers, people who did bad things to other people. And their amends were obvious. They make up for the wrongs they did. They pay back the money. They apologize to people they've yelled and screamed at or treated badly. But many of us in OA see ourselves and truly have been victims. They're the ones who would read the big book and say, why am I reading this? Why isn't he reading this? You know? So we have to translate the harm that we've done it's more complex. And sometimes we have to understand that the harm we've done is not speaking up when we should have, not taking control of situations, or the harm we've done is giving other people power over us and how we feel about ourselves, and that we take back that power by not letting them have that power. It's complex, much too complex to go into. But as I worked the steps in the big book, and as of May the 1st of 1993, I developed a plan of eating for myself. I worked the steps. And as of approximately May the 1st of 1993, my mind was clear. I could look at ice cream and say, why would I eat this? And not have my mind say, oh, it's a new flavor. You haven't tried it. Or it's organic. It's not made with sugar. It's made with honey. You know, it's none of that stuff. Or they're giving it to you. It's free. It's a sample, you know. My mind would say, this is poison for me and not for other people. And I have the miracle that I no longer am jealous or feel in any way envious of people who are enjoying something that I can't have. That's what I've had for over 28 years. And that for me is an absolute miracle. What I owe to the big book, besides this analysis of what the problem is and how the solution really works, is also the fact that the big book doesn't say every step requires the same amount of effort and time. The big book is really clear. You spend time being convinced that you have a problem with your addiction and that it's life and death. You spend time in OA, you have to spend some time working on a plan of eating that allows you to abstain from what you have to abstain from. That's not easy. It often requires some help. But step two does not have to take a long time. If you have hope, that's all you need. If you have a willingness just to try, that's all you need. Step three is just a decision. Nothing happens if I make a decision and don't do anything about it. The big book is very clear. A decision is worth nothing unless at once it's followed by a strenuous effort to be rid of the things which are blocking us. So step three is a minute in time. We say a prayer. Step four can take 2 weeks, 3 weeks. If you do it the big book way, it's really fast. And then step five and six and seven are done the same day. And step eight is done the next day. And step nine flows from step eight. And you've recovered. Because you're guaranteed, from the big book perspective, recovery, this ability to be around what used to tempt you and not be tempted by it by the end of step nine. And then steps 10, 11, and 12 keep you there. And 12 has to be pursued. The giving of yourself to others, to help others, you cannot keep what you have unless you do your best to give it away. And step 10 requires not just an evening kind of how did I do today, which is what step 11 is, but it's an analysis of what's going on in your life. When you become restless or irritable or discontented, there's a whole bunch of things going on that you have dealt with in the past using steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Now that you're in recovery, you're in step 10, you've got to do the same things you did in step 4 through 9, apply to what has come up afresh. And whenever you're restless or irritable or discontented, or you feel that the food is becoming more tempting, step 10, which is steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, done as recovery, you do it over again. And so it's the constant dedication to helping others, the constant dedication to keeping your spiritual awareness up that the Big Book emphasizes. So the Big Book has been important. I don't really care how people work the steps. What I care is they work them quickly, passionately, and with a sense of commitment. If they don't do that, they'll relapse. If they do that, they will recover. They can recover within days if they choose to. It's possible to do the steps in a week. I wouldn't recommend it, but I would certainly recommend that they do it as quickly as they can. And not, and I, when I talk to people who sponsor, I recommend to them, one size does not fit all. Sometimes people need to be carried through and told, you don't have to read every single word of the doctor's opinion. If you have a good plan of eating, you've done step one. And let's work on step two. You have an idea of God? Do you understand the idea of the blockage? You're on step two. Power, powerlessness, step one. Power, step two. Despair, step one. Hope, step two. Make your decision in step three. Go on to step four. Quickly. Do it as quickly as you can, because that's what the Big Book stands for. And my time is up, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to share. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, Lori. I was telling you earlier on that I went to a retreat years ago at the Scarborough Foreign Mission, and you certainly make the Big Book come alive. And you make it simpler and easy to understand. And for the newcomer, the message is very clear. So thank you so much once again.